this hour's top stories, Iran's foreign minister says Tehran has always extended the hand of friendship to Persian Gulf countries and is ready for a dialogue with them. A key survey forecasts a double-dip recession for the Eurozone economy due to coronavirus lockdowns and restrictions. Also ahead this hour, a UN-backed international treaty on the prohibition of nuclear weapons shunned by nuclear-armed states enters into force. Those were the top stories. My name is Arash Zahidi. Welcome. Our top story, Iran's foreign minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, says his country has always extended the hand of friendship to Persian Gulf countries and is ready for talks with them. Zarif said the Persian Gulf region and its security belong to all nations in that region. He said that is why Tehran has accepted Qatar's proposal for talks between Iran and the members of the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council. Qatar made the proposal earlier this week. Doha said it's ready to facilitate the negotiations to resolve disputes between Iran and GCC members. Qatar has said the GCC members also share the same desire. A double-dip recession for the Eurozone economy is looking increasingly inevitable. That is what a key survey shows. A survey blames that on a slowdown in Eurozone business activity in January. It says the activity decreased because of tighter COVID-19 restrictions. A survey was conducted by London-based leading information provider IHS Markit. The firm made the conclusion based on closely watched PMI index. That is an indicator of economic trends in the manufacturing and service sectors. The firm's PMI index fell from 49.1 points in December to 47.5 this month. The survey also indicated that Britain's relapse into a third national lockdown sparked the sharpest drop in business activity since May. The international treaty on the prohibition of nuclear weapons has taken effect, but without the signatures of the world's major nuclear powers. The treaty, among other things, seeks to prohibit the use, development, and production of nuclear weapons. It was originally adopted by 122 countries in the UN General Assembly in 2017. The treaty was due to take effect 90 days after the 50th signature. Nuclear powers, including the United States, UK, France, Russia, and Israel, have not signed it. Yet the fact that it took effect was praised by the UN. Its Secretary General Antonio Guterres has said the treaty is an important step towards the goal of a world free of nuclear weapons. Political commentator Joseph Duba says the world's major nuclear powers have always been reluctant to join treaties banning nukes.
The community and the world at large celebrates that the nuclear weapons are now illegal, and all along it has been morally wrong to have nuclear weapons in any state. And I think whether we do or we don't have those five states, I think generally, if you look at the history of disarmament, most of these particular states have always been reluctant to join these treaties. And the good part is that whether they are in or not, other disarmament treaties have shown compliance, even those countries that refuse to sign or ratify. They will be forced by the environment, by the globe, to say you need to be part of the solution to address what happened 75 years ago in Hiroshima and in Nagasaki.
The UN has called for more peacekeeping forces to be deployed to the Central African Republic as violence escalates there. The UN peacekeeping mission in the CAR called the situation tense and said peacekeepers should stay there for months. Violence has surged in the Central African Republic following attacks by armed groups opposed to the re-election of President Faustin Archange Touadéra. The groups are allied with former President François Bozizé, whose candidacy was rejected by the Constitutional Court. On Wednesday, government troops repelled an attack by the armed rebels seeking to capture the capital, Bangui. A day later, the government announced a 15-day state of emergency. Now, a London-based rights group has urged Nigeria to release top Muslim cleric Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki and his wife from prison over their deteriorating health condition. The Islamic Human Rights Commission made the call in a letter to Nigerian President Muhammad Buhari. It did so after Zakzaki's wife, Zinat, tested positive for COVID-19. The rights group called on the United Nations to help immediately release them. The couple's lawyer says Zinat is yet to be transferred to hospital 6 days after she was diagnosed with the coronavirus. Zakzaki and his wife have remained in jail as part of a crackdown ongoing since December of 2015. That is when the Nigerian army attacked the cleric supporters in the northern city of Zaria, killing hundreds of them. Political commentator Masoud Chajere says the imprisonment of Sheikh Zakzaki and his wife is an outrageous act by Nigeria's government and is against international law.
The reality is that under the international law, and indeed Nigerian law, someone who is who's ill to the extent that the health condition of both of them, under the current pandemic, should be at least put somewhere safe. I mean, the fact that, you know, someone has actually is already been shown positive should be taken to hospital. We are not saying to you know, overlook the legal due process. What we are saying, the legal due process need to be implemented. Hmm. And indeed, they should be now taken to a safe place, i.e. a medical facility, so they will be able to, you know, to be able to get remedy. What seems to be very clearly, and you know, I say this because I can't see any other excuses except that they really want to endanger their lives, and they want to actually, by dragging their feet, to sort of create the environment where both Sheikhs and his wife are in danger of actually dying. And it seems that that is the only explanation. And that is really is outrageous.
Japan says it will hold the Tokyo Olympics this year, denying reports of the cancellation of the Games.
We will press ahead with preparations for the Tokyo Games with the determination of building tight anti-infection measures and holding an event that can bring hope and courage to the world.
Tokyo organizers have time and again pledged to hold the Games, scheduled to open on July the 23rd. Currently, much of Japan is under a state of emergency due to a third wave of COVID infections. The public remains deeply concerned about hosting thousands of international athletes during the pandemic. Now, organizers say they are working with the government to implement necessary precautions and measures. The Japanese government and International Olympic Committee postponed the Tokyo Games in March of last year because of the pandemic. A group of U.S. Republicans has asked President Joe Biden for tougher response to China's sanctions on over 24 former administration officials. House Republican Michael McCaul said sanctions were a brazen attempt to silence officials who had exposed abuses. He said President Biden must respond immediately and forcefully. Senate Republican Jim Rich said, American lawmakers must show China that the U.S. is determined to defend its interests. On Wednesday, China sanctioned 28 officials of Donald Trump's administration, including his Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. The Biden administration called the move unproductive and cynical. It said China, by making the announcement on Inauguration Day, appeared to be attempting to play into U.S. divisions. U.S. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is reviewing a request from Republicans to put off the start of former President Donald Trump's impeachment trial until mid-February. A spokesman for Schumer said he had received a proposal from Senate Republican Leader Mitch McConnell for the trial delay. McConnell has said he wants Democrats to hold off on sending the impeachment charge to the Senate until January the 28th. He's also asked them to give Trump 2 weeks from that day to prepare a defense. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says Trump's impeachment trial will be soon, but she has not said when the article of impeachment will be sent to the Senate. Pelosi said she will consult with fellow Democrats about the issue.
It's up to them to decide how we go forward, when we go forward. It will be soon. I don't think it will be long, but we must do it.
Last week, the U.S. House impeached former President Trump over his supporters' attack on Congress on January the 6th. The House charged him with inciting the violence. It has prepared an article of impeachment, which should be sent to the Senate in order for a trial to begin. There, a vote by at least two-thirds of members is required to convict Trump. Now, if convicted, a separate vote would be needed to block the former president from seeking office again. Mr. Dan Cohen is a journalist working in Washington, D.C. He says former President Trump would face a 20-year prison sentence if found guilty of inciting the insurrection on Congress.
You know, it's unclear what the Biden administration is going to do in the wake of this, which I think we have to call an attempted coup by the Trump administration, which frankly should be he should be charged with incitement to insurrection. And, you know, that carries a sentence of up to 20 years in prison. And I think, you know, you don't have to be a Biden supporter. Clearly, I'm not to recognize, you know, what has just happened. We saw an outburst of fascism, though I would not say Trump is an ideological fascist. He simply uses the fascists and they used him. And so I think the Biden administration is taking actually somewhat of a weak approach, though it remains to be seen if that will continue. But nonetheless, you know, even if Trump is punished for this, it does nothing to, but paper over the crisis.
New U.S. President Joe Biden has kept his promise to end the ban on travel from some Muslim-majority nations, including Iran. The move has been welcomed by Muslims inside the U.S., but the damage done to America's image may be irreversible. Ramin Mazahiri is in Chicago.
Travel agents in 13 different countries should get ready for a rush of customers. The United States has finally lifted its shockingly xenophobic and unprecedented travel ban. Iran was one of six other Muslim-majority nations which were primarily targeted, which caused ex-President Donald Trump's executive order to become called the Muslim travel ban, informally and infamously. New President Joe Biden ended the ban on his first day in office. The bigotry lasted 4 years, and the damage to American citizens, countless non-Americans, and America's image cannot be overestimated.
The real shame in this is not simply turning our back on, you know, America's tradition of not judging people on the basis of their religion or our constitutional prohibition against that. But what's really, you know, troubling about this is that we have gone through this process where family members have not been able to be together with loved ones.
Husbands and wives have been kept apart for years. Grandparents passed away without seeing their newborn grandchildren. Weddings, graduations, birthdays, funerals, jobs, business deals, educational exchanges. The accumulation of grief and difficulty caused by the Islamophobic ban is appalling. In many ways, the ban backfired, because it emphatically demonstrated the scope and reach of state-sponsored Islamophobia, something which had been routinely denied by the right and the left, not only in the United States, but across the West.
It's really going to require that we go through the hard work of actually implementing policies, not just in travel, but in other ways that fight against Islamophobia, because we know that it has been a feature in our society, you know, certainly for the last 30 years, but even long before that.
The ban led to doctor shortages in a United States which would soon be unable to handle the coronavirus pandemic. It also put a pause on the so-called brain drain, which allows America to stay near the forefront of science and technology. Trump's dehumanizing of Muslims followed years of scapegoating in order to rationalize the wars across the Muslim world started by Trump's predecessors, George W. Bush and Barack Obama. Perhaps above all, the ban showed that in the American system, it is still possible to codify racism into law. the Supreme Court reversed a series of lower court decisions which allowed the ban to go into effect. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Germany's death toll from COVID-19 has surpassed 50,000. The country surpassed a grim milestone after it logged more than 800 new deaths on Friday. New infections registered the same day were over 17,000. Germany is one of the hardest hit European states by the pandemic. It has been in a partial lockdown since early November. The government says the lockdown will be extended until mid-February over dangers from new COVID variants. Meanwhile, the European Union has proposed new travel restrictions to contain the disease. So far, over 30 million people have got COVID across Europe. Of them, some 700,000 have died. EU leaders have agreed that COVID-19, climate change, trade and security should take center stage as the bloc is moving to rebuild relations with the United States. These ties were badly damaged under the presidency of Donald Trump. Brussels and Washington will also attempt to preserve the Iran nuclear deal now that Joe Biden has taken office, Jerome Hughes reports.
Key figures in the EU have been heaping praise and best wishes on the new US President Joe Biden. During a virtual summit on Thursday, the bloc's 27 heads of government agreed to recalibrate multilateral cooperation with Washington. Earlier in the European Parliament, Biden's predecessor was discussed.
This sense of relief that we and many others are experiencing now should not lead us to making any illusions. Trump may be consigned to history, but his followers remain. Millions of Americans voted for President Trump.
Many holding senior positions in the European Union are suddenly willing to talk tough against Donald Trump now that he has no power. Is this what diplomacy looks like? Is this what cowardice looks like? No doubt citizens are drawing their own conclusions. EU leaders have agreed their four priorities with Biden are to work on dealing with COVID-19, climate change, fair trade, and also security. Many argue the Trump era highlighted the extent to which the EU is under America's thumb.
As Europeans, there is one lesson to be learned from these last 4 years. We cannot rely our destiny only in the United States, not anymore.
Now that Biden is in the White House, there is fresh optimism that the Iran nuclear deal, which Trump did all in his power to destroy, might now be saved. Apparently, there is much to be gained.
Whether it's technology, whether it's energy resources, there's a lot of potential of working together with Iran. Also from the Iranian perspective, with respect to its own development, it also needs to have flourishing relationship with Europeans.
EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell is due to chair a meeting of the bloc's foreign ministers this coming Monday. The future of the nuclear deal will be discussed. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
And that's it with international news.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Foreign enmities and domestic treacheries against self-sufficiency.
This is part of a televised speech delivered on July 31, 2020 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the supreme leader of the Islamic Revolution on the occasion of Eid al-Adha.
In the sacred defense era, both Eastern and Western blocs were against us. Both the Soviet Unions of those days and the U.S. and European countries were against us. But we managed to resist without them for 8 years and defeat the enemy. We managed to bring Saddam to his knees and create a disastrous situation for him. We managed to pull this through. In other words, our reliance is on God and on ourselves, but we will make the most of our friends, resources, and potential, God willing. You should also know that there is enmity against domestic capabilities. Some of these enemies are foreign and some are domestic. I will tell you that those who are prepared to import a certain product from foreign markets to create competition inside the country and ruin domestic factories only for the sake of his own personal benefits, this is because they reap some profits from imports, are committing an act of treason. Unfortunately, despite the fact that I stressed this matter before, we still see that some people import certain products from foreign countries while such products are manufactured in the country and they have good quality.
Your light and love, all I see, nothing more I'd ever want to need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor, grant me faith to be stronger.
Poor factory owners who have invested in their business with a lot of trouble will not be able to sell their products. We should know that such oppositions and enmities exist inside the country. Since long ago, there has been enmity against domestic independence. More than 150 to 160 years ago, Amir Kabir wanted to make the country's economy and vital capabilities independent. However, with its malice, despicable nature, and temptations that it provoked, the British embassy coerced Nasiruddin Shah into discharging him for chancellery. Later on, they murdered him, which was the English doing.
Alhamdulillah, Alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah. Alhamdulillah, Alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
pilgrimage again.
The years of war in Syria were difficult years, a time when Syria was the source of bad news. Before the war, Syria was so peaceful that it seemed it was solely created for pilgrims to visit it and seek tranquility, a place of pilgrimage for Muslims and Christians alike. But war killed and destroyed so much of Syria that perhaps it has killed the memories of the past too, the memories held in the minds of those who had seen Syria before the war. War has ended in many Syrian cities, and this means that pilgrims can once more travel to Syria for pilgrimage. With this hope that pilgrims will once again set foot in this land, we will visit the different pilgrimage sites in Syria and see how they have survived the war. Aleppo is Syria's largest and most populated city. It is also among the oldest cities in the world that has linked the East to the West for many centuries. Aleppo is not only a city for Muslims, many Christians also live in this city. In fact, one of Aleppo's tourist attractions is the many beautiful churches in the city. Historically, Aleppo has been famous for its bustling bazaars, its textile industry, its seminaries and universities, and the Aleppo Citadel. These are all what makes Aleppo important and special. And perhaps due to its importance, terrorists tried relentlessly to fully occupy the city during the war, but they were never successful. This enduring war has left Aleppo with scars. In the city, one can find prosperous and bustling neighborhoods next to neighborhoods that have been fully destroyed. For Muslims, especially Shia Muslims, Aleppo is home to two important sites, and it was always visited whenever Muslims travel to the city, Mashhad al-Hussein and Mashhad al-Muhsin. It is said that when the Karbala caravan enters Syria from Iraq, it stayed near a church for one night. A holy father from the church noticed that there is a light shining up to the sky from Imam Hussein's decapitated head. That is why, by paying a hefty sum of money to the soldiers, he managed to borrow the Imam's head for a night. The Holy Father baptizes it and places it on an altar. This altar is now a pilgrimage site. The current building was built around Mashhad al-Hussein. Its architecture resembles that of old churches in the area. Mashhad al-Muhsin is also related to the events of Ashura. It is said that Imam Hussein's wife was pregnant, but the baby was lost after the incident of Ashura. The baby was named Muhsin and was buried in the place that later became known as Mashhad al-Muhsin. These two pilgrimage sites only stand 300 meters apart, but during the war in Aleppo, it was the border between the terrorists and the resistance. The terrorists managed to invade and occupy Mashhad al-Muhsin, but they were never able to set foot in Mashhad al-Hussein, despite all their efforts. Yet this pilgrimage site was severely destroyed by the war. After the war, Shia Muslims reconstructed the site, and now both pilgrimage sites are ready for pilgrims to arrive. In Aleppo, there is a tomb that is said to belong to Zechariah, which is located in the Great Mosque of Aleppo. This mosque was originally constructed in the first century of the Islamic calendar. During the war, the Great Mosque of Aleppo was occupied by terrorist forces, and that is how this historic monument was transformed into this ruin. With the liberation of Aleppo, the restoration of the Great Mosque of Aleppo started. This is why all the original pieces of stone were carefully recovered and meticulously recorded so that they can be put in place during the restoration project. Currently, this mosque is not open to visitors or pilgrims. But after its restoration, this mosque and the tomb will certainly be a destination for pilgrims visiting Aleppo. To see the rest of Syria's pilgrimage sites, one must travel from Aleppo towards Damascus. The first place you will come across is Adra. The tomb of Hujr ibn Adi is located in Adra. Hujr was a close companion of Prophet Muhammad and Imam Ali. He never agreed to swear allegiance to Muawiyah and continuously disclosed his corruption. And that is why Muawiyah ordered him to be killed. When Hujr was apprehended, he was given the chance to use profanity against Imam Ali in order to live, but he did not agree. Hujr, along with his son and a number of his companions, were martyred in the 51st year of the Islamic calendar. In August 2013, terrorists occupied the region and entered the mosque where the tomb of Hujr was located. They destroyed the building and desecrated the grave and claimed to have removed the corpse from its original resting place. But after the liberation of Adra, it became evident that the terrorists had only dug less than a meter deep, and since the body was buried much deeper, the terrorists never actually managed to reach it. This site was later restored by Iraqi defenders of the shrine and other Shia Muslims. This site is ready for pilgrims to visit it. On the outskirts of Damascus lies the Mosque of the Prophet Abel. It is located 45 kilometers from the capital city of Syria. This site has always attracted pilgrims to Syria. After visiting Adra and the Tomb of Hujj, the caravans of pilgrims reach Damascus. Historians claim that the city of Damascus dates back to 3000 BC. It is the oldest city in the world that still stands, and people are still living in it. Damascus is just as sacred to Christians and Jews as it is to Muslims. But for Shia Muslims, Damascus is home to a few sacred sites, and one of them is the Bab el-Saghir Cemetery. It is a large cemetery in the center of Damascus that is the burial site for a number of the Prophet's companions and children of the 12 Imams. The most important of which is the tomb of Kulsum, the daughter of Imam Ali and Hazrat Zahra. Close by is the tomb of Sakina, the daughter of Imam Hussein. These two tombs are located in one chamber, and pilgrims can easily visit both. It is believed that Bab el-Saghir Cemetery is also the burial grounds of Abdullah, the son of Imam Sadiq Fatima Sughra, one of Imam Hussein's daughters, and Abdullah, the son of Imam Sajjad. The graves of nine of the Prophet's companions are also located in this cemetery, the most notable of which is Bilal, the first muazzin of Islam. Another companion of the Prophet is Abdullah Ja'far Tayyar, the husband of Lady Zainab. His tomb is adjacent to that of Bilal's. According to some historical documents, three of the Prophet's wives, Salameh, Habibah, and Hafsa, are also buried in this cemetery. Fayzeh and Asma, Hazrat Zainab's maids, are also buried here too. Next to Bab el-Saghir Cemetery is a holy place which is believed to be the burial site for the heads of 16 martyrs of Karbala. They belong to Hazrat Abbas and his brothers, Ali Akbar, Imam Hussein's son, Abdullah and Qasim, the sons of Imam Hassan, Habib ibn Mazahir and Hur are among the 16 heads that have been buried here. This area is separated from the cemetery, and inside the shrine, there are 16 turbans that signify the 16 heads. There are other historical narratives that say that there are only three heads belonging to Hazrat Abbas, Ali Akbar, and Habib ibn Mazahir buried here. Bab el-Saghir cemetery was threatened many times by the terrorists, but with the resistance of the people and the army, it was never occupied. This cemetery remains as one of the major pilgrimage sites of Damascus. The Umayyad Mosque, also known as the Great Mosque of Damascus, is one of the main tourist attractions of Damascus. Parts of this mosque date back 1,400 years. The mosque was built on the site of a Christian basilica, which was the burial ground of John the Baptist. With the construction of the mosque, the burial site of John the Baptist was included inside the building, and Shia Muslims, Sunni Muslims, and Christian pilgrims visited. In the Umayyad Mosque, there are four rectangular halls. One of them is dedicated to Imam Ali, but among Shias, it is known as Ra's al-Hussein. When the Karbala caravan reached Damascus with all of the decapitated heads of the martyrs and the family of the martyrs as captives, they entered the Umayyad Mosque where Yazid was. It is said that the holy head of Imam Hussein was placed where the shrine stands today, known as Ra's al-Hussein. Next to it is a prayer rug and mihrab encased in a glass cubicle, which marks the place where Ali ibn Hussein Zain al-Abidin used to pray while imprisoned in the castle after the Battle of Karbala. The Sayyida Ruqayya Mosque. This mosque is found a short distance from the Umayyad Mosque and contains the grave of Ruqayya, the young daughter of Imam Hussein. After enduring the Battle of Karbala and the torturous journey to Damascus that followed it, Ruqayya reached the Umayyad Mosque. As she could not bear any longer, one night the orphaned three-year-old dreamed of her father and woke up and cried relentlessly. She cried so hard that the soldiers informed Yazid. He ordered the guards to show her the decapitated head of her father Imam to make her quiet. And Yazid was right. The three-year-old Ruqayya was silenced forever. This tragic and moving incident has captivated the hearts of not just Shia pilgrims, but Sunnis and Christians alike. From the very first days of war on Syria, the occupation of Damascus was the terrorists' main agenda. That is why many of the suburbs on the outskirts of the city were occupied or were ceaselessly targeted by the terrorist rockets. One of these suburbs was Darayya, which the terrorists managed to occupy. This suburb was considered as a very strategic base for them, as it was located only 5 kilometers from Damascus. It took 5 years of war to liberate Daraya. It is not too hard to guess what the terrorists did to Hazrat Sakina's shrine while they occupied the area. The shrine of Sakina, the daughter of Imam Ali, was completely destroyed when Daraya was occupied by the terrorists. The occupation has razed Daraya to the ground. The town is in ruins, and the Syrian army has not yet allowed it to be open to the public to enter. And devoted Shias are awaiting the time when the Syrian government reopens the gates of Daraya and they can rebuild the shrine. For sure, the main reason pilgrims travel to Syria is to visit the shrine of Hazrat Zainab. The terrorists almost reached it. They only had 100 meters to go, but they never managed to occupy it because of the resistance forces blocked them. The resistance forces included Syrian Sunni Muslims and Shia Muslims from Syria, Lebanon, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iran, and Iraq. The Iraqi resistance forces could not bear to see the shrine empty of pilgrims, so they brought in their family members from Iraq for pilgrimage during those difficult days. And thus, the shrine of Hazrat Zainab became the central hub for the resistance forces. And the valor of the resistance in defending the shrine inspired resistance forces across Syria. Now pilgrims can visit the shrine of Hazrat Zainab in absolute safety and security.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Muhammad is my guide, Muhammad is my teacher, Muhammad my beloved Rasulullah.
I want to be like you.
Like you.
In everything I do, Ya Rasulullah.
I want to walk like you, talk like you, read my Quran just like you.
And we have not sent you, but as a mercy to the world.
I want to be a servant of God like Muhammad.
Be like Muhammad, live like Muhammad, see like Muhammad did. Muhammad, Rasulullah.
A'udhu billahi min shaitan ar-rajim, bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to Like Muhammad. I am Javed Akbari, and we are going to talk about Allama Tabatabai's Sunan al-Nabi. This is, of course, a book written by Allama Tabatabai, who is one of the great scholars. And Sunan al-Nabi is about the narrations of the Prophet and conducts and customs of the noble Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and his family. According to the Prophet's recommendation and the Prophet's teachings, when we start reciting the Holy Quran, we must begin reciting it by saying, A'udhu billahi minashaitanir rajim. This is what the Holy Prophet says, فَإِذَا قَرَأْتَ الْقُرْآنَ فَاسْتَعِذْ بِاللَّهِ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ الرَّجِيمِ. When reciting the Holy Quran, one should be considerate and reverent. That it's important to handle, of course, the Quran, as I said, with respect. Of course, when you are about to start reading the Quran, it is recommended to say, A'udhu billah min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. This is what, in technical terms, it is called ta'awudh, okay? Or isti'adha. Means A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. And this may be interpreted as such. So when you want to recite the Holy Quran, seek refuge with Allah from shaitan, okay? Shaitan, the outcast, the accursed being. This is the literal translation of A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. And then it's also said that after A'udhu billahi min shaitan rajim, we should start doing tasmiyah. Tasmiyah, what does tasmiyah mean? Tasmiyah means Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Technical term, tasmiyah means to say God's name, okay, to mention God's name. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful. Or in the name of Allah, the most gracious, the most compassionate. And these are some of the adab and some of the manners of the Quran. And of course, it's important that apart from ta'awudh, apart from tasmiyah, it is important that one sit in a quiet corner away from all kinds of distractions and avoid talking to anybody, because one should not converse about the worldly matters while reading the sacred book of God according to the Prophet's teachings. And if we engage in worldly talks, we are very much likely to get influenced by satanic influence or satanic temptation. The Holy Quran says, وَإِذَا قُرِيَ الْقُرْآنَ فَاسْتَمِعُوا لَهُ وَأَنْسِتُوا لَعَلَّكُمْ تُرْحَمُونَ. So this is a verse from the Holy Quran which clearly states that when you are reciting the Holy Quran, or when the Quran is being recited, you have to listen to it carefully and you have to be silent, okay? And silence means you are giving respect to someone, to the recitation of the Holy Quran, and you are listening to it. It is important to listen, because the Quran is not only for recitation, it's also important for listening and reciting, and ultimately understanding the Quran. And of course, there are other recommendations from Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. It is recommended for the reciter of the Holy Quran to brush his teeth with a tooth, with a tooth stick or with a toothbrush. And of course, in modern time, we use the toothbrush. But in the past time, they used the miswak, which was a special stick, and they used it to brush their teeth. Now, the aim of the using the toothbrush is to remove food particles from the teeth and to freshen your mouth, okay, before reciting the whole Quran. And this also constitutes respect. This is also one of the adab, one of the etiquette of reciting the whole Quran.
You are my one true love, taught me to never judge. Now all I want is to be with you.
It's also important to choose a pure and clean place. The place where you recite the Holy Quran, it should be a clean place, a pure place. And preferably, the best place is, of course, masjid. Masjid is the place where you should recite, and where reciting the Holy Quran earns you with more reward. And not only the place where you recite the Quran should be pure, but also your clothes should be pure. It is important to wear new and clean clothes. And it's also important to make sure that your hands are not dirty. These are something very important. And let's move on to another narration from Ummi Salama, who said that the Holy Prophet would pause at each ayah he recited. The Holy Prophet would pause at each ayah he recited. That is to say, he recited the verses articulately, separating between verses, making sure he did not join one verse with another. Okay? And this report from Ummi Salama actually alludes to one thing. We should not rush while reciting the Quran. Tartil is an art. It is a skill associated with the recitation of the Quran. Tartil means to recite the Quran in proper order and with no haste. Now, this word is used in chapter 73 of Surah Al-Muzammil, verse 4. وَرَتِّلِ الْقُرْآنَ تَرْتِيلًا. The verse says that we should recite the Quran in slow, measured, rhythmic tones, and we should not make haste. We need to understand the Quran and contemplate over the verses. And this is what we understand from the report given by Ummi Salama, that the Holy Prophet would pause at each ayah. The Prophet did not join one verse with the other. He did